This is such a cool and different show we're going to do today. And here are the stories that we're going to cover that I think you should know about. Paris, Brussels, London, Berlin, they're in shambles. And I'm going to show you what they actually look like. Why do the European countries who want to change other countries not see the change that's needed in their own damn countries? And what about Moscow? Europeans want it destroyed. They hate it. What's the truth about Moscow? This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and here's what I want to show you and talk about today. Europe. It's a wonderful place. It's historic, important. In fact, it's where my wife, Suzanne, and I honeymooned some 30 years ago. But sadly, that's not the Europe of today. Now, of course, the New York Times, right? They're not going to tell you this. They're not going to show you what I'm about to show you here in just a little bit, which is going to maybe even shock you. Kind of shocks me every time I look at it. CNN's not going to show it to you either. Nobody in the Western media is going to show you or tell you what I'm about to tell you. What they want you to believe is that these European cities like Paris, they're still perfect. They're the type of places where we should all aspire to live instead of those horrible places on the other side of the world. You know, places like China, and Arab countries, and, you know, Russia, right? That's a bias. I mean, I'm almost making fun of it because it is a bias. And I know that you get it. So let's talk instead about the reality. Here's the reality. Despite parts of Paris still being beautiful, and by the way, French cuisine, at least for my taste, the best in the world, I think. Paris is a mess. It's a mess. In the last decade, this is what it's turned into. Watch this video.
Look around. The infrastructure groans under the weight of the crowd. The streets are littered, the buildings neglected, and the city's civic order dissolves in the face of numbers and political inertia. The truth is, this isn't an accident. This didn't happen overnight. This market, this demographic shift, this lawlessness is the result of policies designed to turn parts of Paris into economic zones. Cheap labor, cheap goods, fractured communities, and a slow, systematic erosion of Western cohesion.
I found a bunch of these. That's a video on YouTube. It's a travel video. There's so many of them. That guy there, he calls himself the Wandering Englishman when he does these videos. You can almost hear in his voice the dismay as he discovers that while the French government's elites thumb their noses at so many other countries and spend all of their time and their money trying to supposedly change those other countries, they apparently don't realize, they don't even care about the deterioration and the squalid conditions that permeate their own country and that their own people have to endure. Now, in case you're thinking, well, Rick, that's just an isolated video. I thought the same thing, so I checked. I went to travel advisories, non-Western sources, and here's what I found that they've written about these places. Let's start with Paris. This is how they describe Paris. Crime, pickpocketing and bag snatching and thefts, fairly common, especially in tourist zones, crowded streets, public transport. Scams, they talk about. In Paris, you can expect that you will be scammed by scammers and street performers who will use distraction techniques to rip you off, commonly around landmarks and transit hubs. Appearance. Many areas are run down, gritty, unclean, and look neglected. Perception of safety while walking around at night in Paris. According to user-based index measures, the outskirts of Paris are described as giving a feeling of, quote, low safety. Paris isn't alone. Far from it. I want to take you someplace else now. Are you ready? Let's go to Berlin.
Everything smells like piss.
Berlin in 2025 is changing.
fast, and not for the better. Last year, the city recorded about 539,000 criminal offenses. That's almost 1,500 every single day. Homicides and attempted homicides jumped by 52% compared to the prior year. Politically motivated crime, that's up 29% in 1 year too. More hate, more violence, more division. And the filth is as visible as the fear. Trash piling up in public spaces, graffiti tagging walls all over the city. Neighborhoods that used to feel safe are now packed with tension.
Again, I want to be fair about this. I know, you look at that video and it looks disgusting. That's not the Berlin that tourists see. That's not where the guides take you when they want to show off the country's beauty and history and culture. And there's still plenty of beauty and history and culture. What you just saw is the reality of Germany, right? The underbelly, as told by a travel team. In this case, that's called Two Mad Explorers. That's the name of their YouTube video, right? By the way, check them out for yourselves. You can find them on YouTube and you can see some of the other stuff that they've done. Sadly, though, what they show is not a pretty picture. But again, I checked. Matches up with what I found when I sourced the information again using Travel Advisory's description and non-Western sources. Here, let me take you through some of the headlines. Crime in Berlin, pickpocketing, bag snatching, common in tourist zones, busy streets, and public transit. Drugs, there are drug-related crimes, open drug dealing, there is noticeable drug dealer presence, occasional violence. Neighborhood environment. Expect to see neighborhoods that feel gritty, rundown, neglected, trash, graffiti, poor street conditions. Social conditions. High unemployment, high poverty rates, social stress correlates to organized crime, violence, and a general sense of not feeling safe at night. Now from Berlin, let's go to London. Sorry, but I have to say this before we go to London. I have come to believe that when considering who are the most arrogant, the most self-serving, the most priggish, overweening elites in the world, no one comes close to these people in the UK. They're governing elites. Rule Britannia, it's not a slogan, it's an attitude of superiority that the Brits have exhibited for centuries toward the rest of the world and still do. So let's take a look at their backyard, shall we? They never let anybody see this, but I'm gonna show it to you. Here again, the Mad Explorers.
If you go to Delhi, you want to see Indian culture. If you go to Shanghai, you want to see Chinese culture. If you go to England, at least in London, from a tourist perspective, quite difficult to find people of English ethnicity, and I'm saying this really quietly because I'm scared that somebody's gonna try to hit me, basically, which I've never been scared like this while filming videos. Usually I'm quite open and I speak quite loudly and I don't self-center, but I censor, but in this area here, my God, try and find an English person. Just one. Oh, there's a lady here that might be of English descent. Holy. This is what you get when it's taken a little bit too far.
You know, I like these videos because they're just real people. You could hear her exasperation, right? She's just talking about what she sees, and she's just a regular person. And look, I'm an immigrant, so far be it from me to criticize a country for allowing immigration. I'm for immigration. I think they make countries better. But mass immigration based on needless wars at the expense of your own people? No, no. That's called London in crisis, which is just what we saw. And again, let's check the travel advisories. Let's check the non-biased global sources and see if it matches up with what she just described, right? Number one, crime. Violent crime is, it's not as prevalent as it is in the United States, they write. However, pickpocketing, bag snatching, really common with theft of phones, wallets, and bags, a constant concern. Drugs, some boroughs exhibit high rates of violence, drugs, and gag-related crime, most often concentrated in certain areas. Environment after dark, this is a big one. Expect an increase in thefts, robberies, and public order incidents along major transit hubs and high traffic areas. All right, I saved the worst for last. I'm going to take you now to the literal capital of Europe. The capital of Europe. The Palace of von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas.
Brussels, the heart of the European Union, and the place where every major decision about Europe's future is supposed to be made. But in 2025, the city that represents the EU is also exposing its biggest failures. Decades of mismanaged migration policies, social integration plans that have never delivered, a security strategy that can't keep up with reality, and political leaders who seem more focused on debates and bureaucracy than the people living right outside those very buildings that they're debating in. The EU calls this city a success story, but the cracks are impossible to ignore. And Brussels, its streets, its communities, its growing tension is becoming the clearest sign yet that Europe's policies are falling apart.
Talk about optics, right? That's Brussels. It's the capital of Europe. Looks disgusting. And again, let's be fair. Let's look at the research. Let's not just go by one video. Here's what I found when I sourced travel writers, government advisories, what they tell tourists who plan to go there, for example. Brussels crime. Expect pickpocketing. Expect theft, especially around public transport hubs, crowded areas, tourist sites, and train stations. Be attentive. Keep your valuables secure. Also, vandalism will be present, street harassment and assaults, it writes. Drugs and gang violence, some districts exhibit open drug dealing, gang activity, and even occasional shootings. Environment, a 2025 study found the majority of women surveyed in Brussels feel unsafe at night. So they avoid streets and they take longer routes to avoid any perceived dangers. I mean, there you have it. Those are the cities where the leaders have perhaps the lowest approval measures from their own people. Places from where these elites lecture other countries about how they need to improve their living conditions. And where these leaders are particularly beholden to banks and weapons makers. Can we do one more? Let's do one more. Yeah, let's do one more. I want to do one more comparison, because I think it's especially newsworthy given what's going on in the world right now, right? Very few countries in the world are more criticized, more put upon, more ridiculed by those people, by European elites, who live in Paris and Berlin and London and Brussels, and I could go on. No country is hit by them more than Russia. They will have you believe, if you go there and talk to them, along with their tools in the media, like the BBC, that Moscow, this place, should be avoided at all cost. They don't even want you to come here. They make it almost illegal for you to come here. They will tell you that this is where people are really suffering, that this is a dangerous place. It's an autocratic, ugly place, a place that needs to be changed, or they'll even tell you it needs to be destroyed. Well, we went on YouTube and found some videos of Moscow. Look.
This is the central business hub of Russia, and I'm about to show you around. It's modern, it's sleek, it's beautiful, but most of all, it's what they're not going to show you in the Western news.
We often get comments from some people saying about this communist country and stuff when we showed Russia. And Russia, we've mentioned before, couldn't really be further from its communist past 30 years ago these days. New Russia is probably more capitalist than many, many European countries. And I think this is like a prime example of it.
Guys, look at this metro station. There's chandeliers in the metro station. This is incredible.
Look how clean the streets of Moscow are. We're going to be doing a whole tour, seeing if we can see a single piece of litter.
I came to Russia expecting fear and danger,
But what I've experienced has only been warmth and kindness.
I have to admit, that's one of the things that freaked me out when I got here, too. They clean the streets like twice a day and the sidewalks. It's like, what? It's so weird to see them doing it. Like 6-7 huge trucks come by with foam and stuff. All right, so that's the video. Once again, I want to be fair. Let's look at the facts as related by international sources and travel advisors regarding people who they have visiting Moscow, and they give them information. Again, this is not anecdotal information. It's information that is sourced. Environment. Quote, walking alone at night in Moscow feels far safer than central Paris, London, Brussels, or Paris, or in fact, most U.S. cities. Two, street crime, low. Three, random violence, rare. Pickpocketing, it exists, but not nearly at the scale of Western European tourist hubs. Conclusion, Moscow is exceptionally different for a city of 13-plus million people. And remember those videos of what Brussels looked like? Again, look at this. Look at this.
What is that?
This is Paris, what the streets look like.
Touch anything.
This is awful. Incredible. This is Brussels that you're looking at there now. So now let's look at the sourced information regarding Moscow that we found. It begins with a comment, quote, cleanliness. This is where Western audiences are often shocked when they visit Moscow, the report writes. And here's how it describes. Moscow is extremely well-maintained, fast-cleaned after snow events or construction. Extraordinarily well-kept public spaces such as parks, promenades, malls, and metro halls. Litter is rare in the city center streets and swept daily. Metro stations resemble palaces. So here's the thing, right? Show me how clean and how well-maintained a place is, and I'll tell you how its people feel about themselves and about their country. And it also says a lot about the leaders and how they feel about their citizens. Maybe that's the takeaway. All right, I'm bringing somebody in. We started with him, and we're finishing with him, at least in terms as before we get to the holidays. Moscow Mule's own host, Che Bose. Che, come on in. I want to have a conversation with you, and I want to remember just how tall you are. And it's so good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you.
How Mick. You been? Welcome back.
Of course. Always good to see you.
How are things in Ireland?
Ireland's, you know, it's part of the end stage Europe. Like, you know, it's incredible listening to you talk about it. I've been traveling a lot in Europe, and, you know, it's...
But it's better off than the UK. I mean, it's better off than London, isn't it?
Well, look, Ireland is a country that wants to be best in class in the EU now, okay? We just welcomed Mr. Zelensky.
Yeah.
And they just had to close, like, a 5-kilometre exclusion zone around the city. Not even any of the 120,000 Ukrainians that have been brought into Ireland came out to wave a flag for the guy.
And you welcomed him less than 24 hours after the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
the New York friggin' Times,
yeah.
said that he's corrupt, his mm-hmm. government is corrupt, and they've known about the
News
corruption,
flash.
And, quote, allowed it to fester, my
yeah.
favorite word.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, on top of that, so, you know, the Irish, you know, we're known as very generous people, as you know,
yeah.
when we go to a bar.
Rich. Yeah, but
I always pay the bill, so I'm just, you know.
But if I invited you to my house and I found out before you got there that you just robbed the bank, I'd call you and say, listen, yeah. the dinner's off.
Yeah, but we gave him 125 million euros. You know, so he left with his pockets full in his tracksuit or whatever he wears when he turns up. So, you see, I think what you're saying about the European project, it's end stage because they refuse. It's like the emperor's clothes. You know that analogy
yeah.
that the emperor is actually naked walking down the street. It's only people like you and me and others here because we're allowed to do it here. We're allowed to point out the emperor's actually completely naked, like you say. Same thing with Ukraine.
But you got to go to YouTube to find it. You're not going to find it on the BBC or CNN
absolutely.
Or anything.
Absolutely.
By the way, I've got some news for you. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I understand. Can we confirm this, Boris? Do we have this? Can we report this? Boris? Yes. Okay. We can now report, and the Russian military is reporting, and apparently President Putin, I was going to call him President Trump, President Putin has been informed that Siversk, which is a city, as you well know, in the Donbass, in Donetsk, to be more precise, has been taken by the Russian military. How significant is that?
It's very significant.
We got video, by the way, so tell
us. It's very significant because this is kind of the breaching, if you like, of a very significant defense belt. You know, remember, you know, the Ukrainian army have had, like, well over a decade to turn this area into a fortress, right? Yeah, well, there you go. And this is part of a very, very significant defense chain. Ukraine's running out of men. We've seen Pokrovsk. There's a significant garrison encircled now in Mirnograd, another city. Now, remember, Rick, the generals in charge and Mr. Zelensky are telling us that this stuff, you know, doesn't exist at all, that there's no Russians in Pokrovsk, that there's no encirclement in Mirnograd. So, you know, the fact that...
Well, they're lying.
Of course they're lying. Yeah. Because this is all about managing PR. And that's what even the Ukrainian commanders on the front are saying is, you know, what's going on? Why are our people leaving us here, abandoning us?
Yeah, I've seen... By the way, again, you can go to YouTube and watch those videos.
Sure, and you've even got Ukrainian MP standing up in the parliament calling for Mr. Sirsky, who's the, by the way, Russian, you know, leader of the Ukrainian forces, saying... This is all fake. It's all PR. He's too scared to tell Zelensky the truth about what's going on the front. Zelensky is too scared to tell the people what's going on the front. So you've got this machine of dysfunction and deception. But with Siversk now in Russian hands, it really, really opens a gateway, if you like, because beyond this defense belt, there's not much really to stop the Russian army until the Dnieper River.
What's going on here, Che? I mean, I'm seeing Russian soldiers... the few people who are left in the country who weren't evacuated, because, by the way, and this is really important, I want to tell you guys who are listening to us, there's a huge difference between a grudge match war where one side attacks the other and could give a crap about civilians or the people who live there. Whether you believe it or want to believe it or not, the Russians want to liberate that dog you see right there. They literally believe that the people in this area are Russians, just like them, and they're not just taking the land, they're liberating the land. I know that becomes controversial because people say, well, a war is a war and there's no such thing. No, there is such a thing in the minds of these folks. So what the Russians are, what you're seeing in this video right now, see right there, as the Russian soldiers are coming into these homes, they're now basically going into all the homes and checking to see if there are still civilians that are living there, and they want to provide them with medical assistance and some kind of shelter and food, as it's described to me. Yeah. And I don't see anything in these pictures that tell me differently.
Yeah, and President Putin has said that. He says, we're carrying out a very surgical operation in Ukraine. I mean, look at the casualty figures. These are internationally reported.
13,000 civilians killed.
Yeah, yeah, and that's...
That's a small number.
That's from the Ukrainian army, which are notorious for shelling civilian
areas.
That's
true. That's both sides. They've
been executing civilians as they tried to leave occupied areas.
Yeah, but compare that to Gaza.
There you go.
Possibly 150...
It's got to be the comparison after 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and so...
150,000.
Yeah, and it speaks to two things. Remember, when you see any sort of combat footage, the Ukrainian military are speaking Russian. You know, how I like to talk about it in Ireland is this, the Russians and the Ukrainians and the Belarusians are like the Scots and the Irish and the Welsh. We're very, you know, similar. We're one family, essentially.
Yeah.
Genetically, historically, we speak the same language. We practice the same religion in most cases. So this perception in the West, this manufactured idea that Ukraine is a completely standalone territory, is not true. I mean, you won't find anybody here in Moscow, as you know, who will say, I think this war is a great idea. We love the idea that we're at war with Ukraine.
Exactly.
It doesn't exist. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, there's this manufactured reality.
They do want to kill Russians.
They want Russians to die. Well, they do if you listen
all
to
of them,
state
the
media.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you listen to Mr. Zelensky's cabal, because that's the manufactured view that there has to be this absolutely separate Ukraine. Ukrainians dug the Black Sea with a knife and fork. You know, Jesus himself was Ukraine. This whole manufactured history of Ukraine, which the Russians don't need because they actually have a massive history.
But when you look at this area, right, and I'm kind of using my hand as an example right here. I don't know if you can see it here. Take me on camera one so I can kind of show what I'm talking about. This whole area is what it looks like the Russians are basically manifesting, liberating, taking, whatever terminology you want to use, right? It goes all the way down to here. So all of this is people, right, closer to the Russian border, which is here, right? And these people who live here tend to be historically, ethnically, religiously, linguistically Russian.
Yeah, this is a novelty. The Russians have a term for it. This was all part of the Russian Empire for hundreds and hundreds of years. Cities like Odessa were founded by Catherine the Great.
Yeah.
You know, Crimea. Crimea has been Russian for hundreds and hundreds
of
years.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the stuff they've taken so far. Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia.
But these populations, you know, many of the nationalists
don't
in
take
Ukraine,
me to Odessa yet. You're going to start a controversy here. We'll get there.
Yeah, many of the nationalists who sort of... are arguing now with Zelensky in Kiev, I watch this stuff very closely, are saying they don't even want us there. The people hate us. Why are we losing so many people trying to hold on to Donbass, if you like? We should probably just leave. We don't want it. They didn't want it. Most people in Western Ukraine, you know, in Lvov and right on the borders of Poland, you could argue that a lot of these territories are Polish, Hungarian and Romanian, you know. So they're sort of, the spiders are eating each other in the jar right now having these discussions.
I've got to tell you this. Have you seen, there's a new video that was just released about an hour and a half ago of the United States European envoy to NATO. She didn't know she was being recorded. She basically got pranked by somebody. They called her and asked her to comment on what would have happened if back in 2021, 2022, Zelensky would have said, it's okay, we're willing to remain neutral. We're willing to remain neutral. And she says, and hopefully we can find this. Maybe Boris and these guys will look for it. If they find it, they'll give me the heads up and I'll play it for you. She says, it's all over the place, by the way. She says, well, yes, we knew that he was possibly willing to say we'll remain neutral to avoid the war, but that would have been good for Russia, so we didn't allow him to say that. Instead, we made sure there was no neutrality. By the way, the opposite of neutrality is anti-Russia. Mm-hmm. So the West pushed, in her words, as you'll hear when you see this video, in her words, the West pushed Zelensky to turn down neutrality for the sake of making Russia angry, thinking Russia wouldn't do anything about it. Russia did, and that's how this whole thing transpired.
Yeah, yeah. But again,
but you and I've said that before.
Yeah, of course.
But this is the American representative
just saying it out loud or being caught saying it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Of course, they knew that. They knew this in NATO. They knew it in the EU. They knew that they were funding a very exquisitely corrupt regime. They knew this.
Yeah.
Of course, they knew because the CIA is so embedded alongside MI6 in the Ukraine. Every operation in the Black Sea is directly operated by British intelligence. I can tell you that because I have sources down there reporting on this stuff, telling me directly what's happening. They're directing these attacks, the ones on the tankers.
Yeah.
The CIA during the Biden regime were completely running the show. None of this equipment, none of this attackums, none of this stuff can get targeted without American.
The Patriot system doesn't shoot itself.
Ukraine doesn't have a single satellite. It has no capacity to prosecute this war. So on one hand, it's saying to everybody, we're a sovereign state that's been invaded. You know, we're this blameless maiden skipping through a meadow.
Yeah,
where it's come discount the whole attack on the civilian, their own population in Donbass, prior to the Russian intervention.
Yeah, and what you're saying is so true because it undercuts the whole idea of neutrality, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because that's apparently all, and this video that I watched a couple times today just before coming out on the air seems to exemplify that neutrality is all the Russians wanted. They said, essentially, as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, we're fine with Ukraine being as it is, as long as it's neutral and sovereign.
Or even being in the EU.
Yeah.
They said, go for the EU.
But you can't be a part of NATO because now you're an offensive, aggressive force weaponized against us because that's what NATO is.
Yeah, because great powers don't tolerate existential threats on their borders. This is real politics. People like Professor John Mearsheimer have said this from the start.
You mean like the Bay of Pigs?
Yeah, exactly.
You mean like the Cuban Missile Crisis?
There you go. Great point. Because the Americans weren't going to tolerate that.
Yeah.
And in real power politics, the Russians weren't going to allow Ukraine to become a springboard for their enemies to destabilize Russia. Remember, you've got people in the EU who are actively advocating for the dismemberment, destruction of the Russian government, of the Russian state. backing people like Alexei Navalny, a very corrupt criminal, racist, you know, who advocated for shooting immigrants.
But they loved him.
They love him all of a sudden, right? His wife now is some sort of Madonna who's being wheeled around Europe alongside this lady who is apparently going to take over in Venezuela. So you got
Machado.
Exactly. So they're backing this, and the Russians are meant to stand back and say, hey, yeah, well, how can we help you? Can we put out some chairs for you so that you can place weapons that can hit our people in Belgorod, Bryansk, places I've been and seen the damage that these NATO-supplied weapons have done to civilians?
I wanted to ask you more about Europe, but we're already fully into this conversation. We're going to leave some time to talk a little bit about Europe because I want your perceptions of that, especially after sharing with our viewers these incredible videos. But since we're on this subject, and since we've just broken the news that another city has fallen and the Russians now control, where does this stop? Because I'm hearing from Doug McGregor, I'm hearing from Mearsheimer, I'm hearing from Ritter, I'm hearing from several other people that there's a real possibility that if all of these Ukrainian defenses fall, there's nothing to stop the Russians. And if they continue to say they don't want a deal, then Odessa looks like it's the next target, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you got to look back at
About what happens if the Russians take Odessa. What is left of Ukraine?
If the Ukrainian economy is cut off from the Black Sea, it's a fatal blow for the Ukrainian economy. Now, remember, Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. It used to be the sort of dynamo, the industrial dynamo of the Soviet Union was based around a place like Mariupol, the Azovstal steelworks. These were massive industrial centers that powered the power of the Soviet Union. Mines, heavy metals, rare earths. This is an exceptionally wealthy and powerful region, all built by Soviet infrastructure, by the way. A very important point. The Ukrainians talk about, the Russians are coming to, destroy us. Russia wants to erase Ukraine. It was Russian and Soviet power that built all the infrastructure in Ukraine. It was probably Lenin who first came up with the idea of a modern Ukrainian state. So you got to get your head around the reality of all this pushback in Ukraine against
and
Russia.
And Khrushchev, who gave it to Russia. Him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think the idea of Odessa is two things. It's strategic, of course, because it's an exceptionally important port, but it's also emotional. Living among the Russians.
Yeah, they're Russians.
The Russian people here, everybody who talks to you, what's the deal? The war's going to end in Ukraine. Great. What about Odessa? It's always there, like standing in the room, this
Sources tell me, and I know you have better sources than me, but my sources tell me that there are already special ops inside there.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, Odessa is a Russian city. It's a Russian-speaking city. We recently had the...
But I'm trying to press you on this.
Yeah, well, look,
Journalist to journalist.
Yeah.
I'm hearing it's not just, pie in the sky that the Russians can take Odessa.
Well, look, remember, the Russians are an exceptionally well-resourced state militarily. Russia has an incredibly complex and well-resourced foreign intelligence service, too, of course. There are millions of people in Ukraine who consider themselves Russian, but they're terrified. I was in,
But Russia doesn't want the part of Ukraine that's not
Russian. Of course
Russian.
They don't.
They don't want the Polish side.
What Russia wants
I don't
to do
think,
is remove this existential threat to the existence of the Russian state.
Yeah.
The problem is, the more the Europeans who are so invested in this catastrophic proxy war in Ukraine, right, the more they reverse away from peace, the more Russia may have to say, well, look, we're going to be hung for a sheep as a lamb. We're sanctioned. What is it? We're on the 20th sanctions package now.
Yeah.
Russia can't play ping pong. It can't play table tennis. Russian kids can't do Irish dancing. I mean, it's so insane, okay? The level of Russophobia.
Russian kids do Irish dancing.
Yeah, Irish dancing is one of the most popular things in Russia. It's a great, because Irish dancing is very cool. I'll take it to a class.
I love Irish
dancing.
I'll
take it to a class.
I've been to Irish dances in Miami, as a matter of fact. It's big in the United States.
So the more they sort of escalate. I mean, today I saw Mark Rutte saying it out loud. He said, the Secretary General of NATO said, Russia, we're Russia's next target. He's not even trying to couch it in anything.
I know.
They realize that the proxy war in Ukraine is lost. They realize it's just a matter of time before Zelensky is removed or, the Russians break through and the whole army collapses. Ukraine doesn't have the men to fight along a 1,000-kilometer front.
Or the interest.
They don't have it. They don't have. People are tired of it. As President Trump said, over 80% want this war over in Ukraine.
By the way, why would Russia want those pictures I just showed? Why would they want that? Yeah. Did you see what I showed?
Well, see, this
did
is
you,
the reality.
Did you see the video I put up a little while ago?
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, I've been in these cities. I've been in Brussels. I've been in Paris. I was in Paris recently. And here's the reality.
It's a mess.
Europeans who live, the taxpayers in these cities and countries, like Ireland, for example, exceptionally expensive country to live. You're never going to own a home in Ireland now on an average industrial wage. We have a huge immigration, all thanks, by the way, to the EU. We've got a lot of sub-Saharan
and
Africans.
NATO.
Yeah, well, we're not a NATO country in the Republic, in the north, which is part of the UK. So you've got
I mean, the wars still cause the people to run.
And Ireland is a completely neutral country, we're told.
Yeah.
We've got an anti-NATO and a pro-Palestinian president, so we're told. But she put out her hand and welcomed Mr. Zelensky, as she was instructed to do. Everybody falls into line. Maloney, all these people who say they're going to, going to clamp down on this. We're going to fight for the rights of Italians and Irish people. When the globalist machine gets hold of you and you get into the top seat, you're given your script and you're told to write it. Unless you're someone like Viktor Orban. Viktor Orban has said, we're not going to take all these immigrants in as part of the EU. And the EU is fining that man and that country €1 million a day. The Hungarians have been fined over 500, nearly half a billion euros by the EU. Can you imagine that? This is the EU fining a member state because they refuse to take all these undocumented migrants over
there. Listen, I had a conversation with their foreign minister yesterday. I'm sure you saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
This thing has gone everywhere.
They're being penalized. Yeah, yeah. They're penalized for telling the truth, for saying we want to protect Hungarian jobs, we want to protect Hungarian families, we don't want to fund through NGOs who pump hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars and euros into democratic countries to basically overthrow and go against the democratic will of the countries. This is the craziness of EU.
It all comes down to, he calls it a patriotic movement. In fact, I asked him, I said, why do you keep using the word patriot?
Yeah.
I said, because that's what we are.
Sovereignty.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the idea that we're there to serve the people of our country, not other interests.
When did we forget how to do that?
Exactly.
I mean, look at
it seems silly, doesn't it?
So, Trump came out with, America first.
Like the EU wants to help everybody but the people of Brussels.
So you got to ask yourself, what is the plan? There's got to be some sort of cohesive plan. If everybody could go everywhere, everything is beige. The idea of diversity is just code for sameness. That what happened to celebrating the things that make us different?
Yeah.
We used to get on a plane and go to Germany and go, well, the beer is great here. Look, the Lederhosen. This is great. Now I'm leaving Germany. I'm going back to Ireland. Or I'm going to go to the UK. I'm going to go to London. I'm going to meet loads of English, British people. And, I'm going to eat pie and mash. I'm going to go to America. Now Europe wants everything to be beige. They don't want a United States of America.
That's interesting.
With a constitution. They want to have this bureaucracy-based dictatorial regime. It's almost like a Fourth Reich, okay? The European Union, a friend of mine said this to me recently, he said, has to become the Soviet Union minus the free education, minus the space travel, minus the free vacations, minus the great transport system, and minus the ability to actually defend itself.
Right.
The European Union has become a sort of a self-perpetuating machine of control. And the one thing they hate is they hate sovereignty. That's why Mr. Orban and Mr. Fiso and Mr. Babiš now in the Czech Republic are seen as enemies within their own ranks.
I know.
Imagine that. This is meant to be a union where we bring everyone together and say, okay, let's work for the majority. Let's work for each other. And they're actually fining this country hundreds of millions for saying, we don't want our country flushed with immigration.
Do you think it'll grow? Do you think this movement, I mean, they got three now, right? Slovakia, the Czech Republic, and Hungary. Yeah. They've got the AfD movement that's taking place in Germany, which is now the biggest and most popular party in the country. So we're starting to see signs that there's big pushback.
And this is why they're so panicked. So imagine this. You're the EU guy. You're sitting there. You're looking at the table. What have you got on your table? You've got a grossly corrupt dictator in Ukraine who you've backed. You've flushed with hundreds and hundreds of millions of euros, okay? You've taken them on, you've backed them in this bar fight that you're never going to win, okay? So it comes to the point where the bar fight, someone's going to have to pull out a gun and fire a shot at somebody because they're losing, Okay. On top of that, internally in the EU, you've got numerous movements for sovereignty. People saying, we've enough of this. We don't want some guy in Brussels telling us that we need to have a village full of fighting-age men from sub-Saharan Africa. We never started a war. That's happening in Ireland, in my country right now. There's villages and towns out in the west of Ireland where there used to be a hotel where Americans would turn up in the summer, come and play golf, drink a few beers, a nice little economy, a 15 billion euro economy, destroyed by the fact that the hotels are now full of either Ukrainians or illegal migrants who the state is obliged to take because the EU says so. It's absolutely crazy. So the EU is not only seeing itself as being attacked by China, Russia, Iran. China, Russia, and Iran have no intention of attacking the EU. The EU is the master of its own destiny. It's isolated itself into irrelevance when it comes to Ukraine. They're not even in the room with the Americans and the Russians.
And it's funny because Zelensky and the EU are fighting against America.
Now, it's remarkable.
It's crazy. Trump is basically putting them in their place and saying, you people are crazy. Look what you're doing.
It's
and he told Zelensky, you're nuts. I mean, dude, you're losing.
You don't have the cards. He said it twice.
Yeah, you got a deal. Now. It's time to come to the table. Yeah.
And
he
every
says, no.
time they've said no to a deal, Ukraine gets smaller. Something I often post on my social media is like, today Ukraine is smaller than it was yesterday.
Yes.
And this is the reality. Look, there's Siversk today. You know, remember Bakhmut, Solidar. This is an incremental grinding move forward by the Russians. They want to preserve their men. They want to preserve civilians. That's why they're not having a total war. Remember, Russia's got the biggest arsenal of nuclear weapons on Earth. It's in the constitution of Russia. It can't use them. It wouldn't ever use them. You know, remember we had this Putin saber rattling about nuclear weapons. It's all absolute desperation from the EU and from NATO to try and say, you know, hope that Russia would do something radical. That's why they are attacking ships on the Black Sea, hoping Russia will do something in response so that they can say, there you go, Russia's an aggressor. Russia is the bad guy.
I put out a podcast the other day and I wrote it up and I basically said at the end that there's a fear that Zelensky is going to have a Ceausescu-esque ending.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I think it's very possible.
For sure.
I don't think I'm the only one who is intimating this.
And remember, Mr. Zelensky came to power in 2019 saying he was going to end the war, Rick.
Yeah.
And he was going to tackle corruption.
You think the Americans will take him out?
I mean, look.
It's starting to look like look, here's what I'm... Let me say this before you give me an answer. My sources tell me that a lot of this corruption probe was basically handled through Washington.
Of course.
What do you mean, of course?
Look, like, a lot of people based in Kiev would know. There's no way that people were going to come out and protest openly on the streets in Kiev against Zelensky's attempt to close down Naboo. When he tried, you know, some months back, Zelensky tried to shut down these.
So Naboo is working with the U.S. Justice Department.
Yeah. I mean, I think the CIA...
It looks that way,
I mean, there's a three-letter organization, I would suggest, that is heavily involved in directing this corruption.
So let's play this out, you and I. Right, because we've seen every step of the way. In fact, we've covered it. We've been there, right? Trump tries to get Zelensky to deal. He doesn't deal. Trump tries again. He doesn't deal. Trump tries to bring him to the White House. He doesn't deal. Trump brings him to the White House and then brings all the EU and NATO guys to the White House. They still don't deal. They fight, they fight, they fight. Finally, Trump says to one of his neocon buddies, go on in there, work with Naboo. Show me something to give reason for the world to want to get rid of this guy. The Trump administration basically has the wherewithal to create Zelensky as a corrupt MF.
Yeah, and also...
My anthem, agree?
I think you're right. And here's the thing. I think there's a big piano hanging over Zelensky's head. And I think the Americans have the rope. And they can just release that anytime they want.
Yeah.
Remember...
But the EU's fighting him.
Yeah, the EU will back... If Zelensky turned out to be Satan himself, if it was revealed by scientific fact, the European Union would certainly say that Satan ain't such a bad guy. You know? So remember, it's the same with the Nazism
well
in Ukraine. This you know, disproportionate influence of radical Ukrainian nationalism, Azov, Aydar, Tornado. These groups went through Donbass, Mariupol, torturing, raping, murdering civilians.
People forget that.
In their hundreds, okay? They are, worshipped in Kiev. Remember, during this...
By the way, the Russians are making a case now at the United Nations that was genocide that took place.
Of course. And the...
The case has been accepted. They've
accepted the case. Yeah. Because remember, if you go to Kiev, if you're lucky enough to go there, and hopefully someday we'll do a show from Kiev, who knows, maybe sooner than later, You know, the 1st of January is Stepan Bandera Day. Stepan Bandera was a Nazi collaborator, yeah. child killer, radical nationalist who murdered people. Roman Shukeyevich, these people, our viewers can Google these
people. He didn't just murder people. He exterminated
Poles,
people in mass.
Jews, yeah. Russians, Hungarians yeah. in Transcarpathia, murdered en masse, okay? Yeah. Mr. Zelensky had to align himself with these groups who were very active on the front line during what the Ukrainians called the anti-terrorist organization, which was an attack on their own people because they refused to accept the Maidan coup in 2014. They rose up and said, we don't want to be governed by a bunch of neo-Nazis from Lvov. No, thank you. They were attacked. Remember, it was the Ukrainian regime that fired the first shots against its own people. And CNN reported that, Rick. And that report is still out there on the internet. People want to have a look at it. They reported initially saying Mr. Poroshenko is going to find it hard to claw back any sort of love from his own people for what they've done.
So let's share, let's wind this thing down. Again, my sources tell me that the expectation, both in Washington and in Moscow, and especially in financial circles, is this thing winds down by spring of next year.
Well, I don't think it can continue. I mean, Sun Tzu, one of the greatest military... I mean, I studied, you know, military strategy.
Great book, by the way.
I did a
The 48 Laws of Power. 48 Laws of Power.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And he said that no country can profit from a long, long war, okay? It's not possible. You know, Russia has some issues in its economy. It's in danger of overheating, actually, because there's so much wealth inside Russia now, which is remarkable. You know, that's why so many infrastructure projects are happening here. Russia has the biggest gold reserves it's ever had. Today, yeah. that was announced. So Russia has been inoculated, if you like, from influence, economic influence,
but
and sanctions
it
from the West.
It doesn't want the war to continue.
It doesn't need it. It doesn't. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants the war to continue. Yeah. The Russians have sacrificed a lot of men, material, and treasure to get a result in Ukraine. I don't think there's any way the Russians are going to accept anything but achieving the goals that Vladimir Putin set out on the 24th of February, 2022. Denazify, demilitarize. So, and that's what is going to happen.
So, but well, here's the point, though. With the Americans out, it's only a matter of time. It's inevitable.
Yeah, the Europeans cannot fund this war.
The Europeans can't do
they
this by themselves.
Absolutely.
The Ukrainians don't have the wherewithal.
Yeah.
They don't have the
and
money.
And the Americans and the Russians are talking. People like Kirill Dmitriev.
Correct.
Head of the direct investment fund into Russia.
I met with him two Saturdays ago.
Yeah, talking to Rubio, talking to Witkoff. And people saying, oh, you know, these guys aren't diplomats. They shouldn't be organizing peace. Imagine. You know, but maybe if the actual diplomats, like people like Kaya Kallas, come on, I mean, she's got to be one of the most inept beings that's ever stood on two feet. Yeah. And she's in charge of European diplomacy. I mean, I don't even know if she knows what day of the week it is. It's quite remarkable. She didn't know that China and Russia were involved in the victory in the Second World War. I mean, this person has been rolled out, imagine, represent European citizens like me.
She's a banker. They're all bankers.
It's quite remarkable stuff. So in the space, in that vacuum, the Americans and the Russians are talking to each other. Thank God they are. Thank God Mr. Trump has said, look, let's talk. Let's get this done. Thank God he's a businessman. Yeah. Thank God he's put actual people who want peace. I think Witkoff wants peace. Mr. Putin wants peace. Put them together. Let's have peace. A just peace. But the Russians know that no deal is better than a bad deal. And that's very important for people to understand.
Yeah, because they've signed a lot of bad deals.
The Russians won't let their kids fight the next war in Ukraine because there ain't going to be one. And that's very important for people to understand.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting? When I first got here, and I hadn't done anything here yet, I was just kind of getting used to Moscow, the very first person I sat down and did a show with was, remember who that was?
Yeah, I do.
Who was it?
Very good-looking Irish guy. I don't think he's available today, so they brought me in.
It was you, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And, you know, here we are saying goodbye, at least for now, because I'm going to go back and spend some time with my wife and kids. We're going to celebrate Christmas together.
And it's been great, I got to say. Like, working here with you, it's been fantastic. The show has been great. It's really, really been something.
It's different, isn't it?
It's great. It's completely different. It's what we need. We need this open debate. We need a forum where we can just tell the truth, tell people what's actually going on, for good, for bad. And it's been great. And thanks to you for doing it.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say. I've enjoyed meeting with you and the team. And it's amazing. You know, it's funny. We were just doing this thing today where I was talking about these cities in Europe. And at the very end, we dropped in the fact that what's happening in Moscow is very different. I was one of those. I remember when I first got here, you and I had a conversation, and I said I was shocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't think Moscow was a horrible city because, you know, I'm smarter than that. But I didn't think it was as good as it is. Yeah. I had no idea that I would not see homeless people, generally speaking, and that I would not see crime, generally speaking, and that I would not see drug problems, generally speaking, and all these things that you and I know very well because we come from the West that are part of just living in those places. They don't exist here. Yeah. And there's it's just a whole different sense.
I think I often say to people, you know, the reason they ban Russian media in the West and they ban Mr. Putin's speeches, that they don't feature this stuff, okay? Russia can only do harm, can only do bad.
I know.
And when you see that, you go, no, that can't be right, okay?
Maybe they can't all be bad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Maybe the reason they don't want you to listen to Mr. Putin or us is because you might actually go, hold on a second. Maybe they're the good guys. I mean, are we the bad guys? I mean, maybe we're the bad guy. Maybe we need to be challenging enemies much closer to home, like our own political elites who are trying to push us into a war with a country like Russia, who has no animus whatsoever against European people or Americans.
None.
Absolutely none.
None. And that's really so important. Yeah, and what's really been great is just the experience of meeting people who have a different point of view and access to people who we, guys like you and I, would never have a chance to talk to.
Yeah.
We wouldn't know that there are people who have different opinions. And this is what this is really all about. This kind of thing happened in the past. There was a time when a guy named Phil Donahue, you know, used to come to Russia. And then he'd invite Russians and have conversations. There was engagement. There was exchange. This is what needs to happen again. And this is what you and I are doing. You're an Irishman. I'm, you know, a Cuban guy who was American. And we're sharing perspectives with our own people so that they can better understand that we are a lot more similar than we are different in this world.
For sure, for sure.
And I'm so glad to be able to be a part of this. So, you know, listen, for you and, you know, for the guys in the control room and for all of you who, especially all of you, who invite us into your homes every day. Because you have decided that this is a part of your viewing pattern every day. And hundreds of thousands of you write to us every single day. And I try and read as many of those comments as I possibly can. And it's important because it means we're engaged, that we're sharing ideas. Not everybody agrees with the stuff that he says or I say. And that's perfectly fine, too. But I just want you to know, I know you're there. And I especially appreciate that you let us into your homes every day. And then you comment and you tell us what you think. It's like a family. It's growing. And I'm so glad you're a part of it. And I'm glad to be a part of it. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm going to go spend some time during the holidays with my family. The crew will be here. He's going to stick around. So we'll let you know what's up. Thanks for being with us. God bless. Once again, thanks for letting us into your homes. And we'll be looking for you. Good night.